parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
I'm pleased to say we're joined by Joanna Fortune. It's Joanna's first time with us. Joanna is a psychotherapist. Joanna, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. Right, here's the first question for you. My son just turned 3 and has started preschool. We started toilet training when we felt he was ready in June, and no problem with peeing in the toilet, but he flat out refuses to poo in the toilet or potty. If he's trying to poo and we ask him, he will deny he needs to go to the toilet, or he will sit on the toilet or potty for just a few seconds and then say he doesn't need to go, but will poo a few minutes later in his pants. We in the creche have tried everything from sitting him in the toilet, reading stories and playing games to promising a surprise, essentially flat out bribery. I have offered him the option of putting on pull up pants so he can poo in them and then removing them, but nothing seems to be working. Advice would be welcome, please.
I bet, yeah. I mean, she's really tried everything, the mum or dad who wrote this in. And it's something that comes up a lot because young children can struggle with especially pooping in the toilet. And it's why there are so many storybooks. You know, she mentions she's done those. There's a reason that so many of them exist on the market because it is such an issue. My first piece of advice at this stage, given how much she and the creche have actually tried, would be, and she doesn't mention it, a visit to the GP just to rule out that there's nothing physical that is actually causing him pain or discomfort, or he isn't suffering from a constipation. And that would be my first step. The second step I would take is that he's still just 3. And yes, it's a good time to begin toilet training, but he may not be ready for the number 2 part of the training. And he may simply need more patience and more time with that, as best as everyone can facilitate. Because a lot of young children, Sean, really feel that going to the toilet, particularly their number 2s, is quite a sensory experience. They can have a little fear or worry that they're losing a part of themselves, that if they push too hard, their tummy will come out. I've heard this in my own clinic from small children. A book, and she's read books, but I'm going to throw another one out there that I have found very effective. It's called Everyone Poops by Taro Gomi. It's a very old Japanese book, but has been translated into English. And it's a really nice book to use. Some children find that really useful. And building a little narrative for them about, I mean, you can do everything and go wild with this, from creating a poop city, a poop town, that you're sending the poop home. You know, children think in very magical, visual, omnipotent thinking. So I would go down that route. And I know she's tried the pull-ups, but there can be a staged process that, again, works with some kids and not others, but to try, yes, the pull-up, but then wearing the pull-up to go to the toilet while sitting on the toilet, then maybe progressing to cutting a hole in the pull-up while sitting on the toilet. I know it sounds bizarre, but he still has the structure and safety of the pull-up while doing it, and then progressing gradually to the toilet. I think it's a case of lots more patience and time, but please do go to the GP just to rule that out.
Yeah. And so should she at this stage then just withdraw from putting him on the toilet at all, seeing he will do a pee in the toilet?
My temptation would be to stop it and don't force it as an issue, but go back to the beginning and start over with introducing it and just take more time with it. So start as if she hasn't introduced number 2 potty training and re-begin it slowly and gradually, and using lots of narrative. Kids love stories, and if they create characters around their poop and sending it home to a big city, it can help.
Yeah, I must try that myself. Yeah. my 7-year-old daughter daydreams. Since junior infants, the teachers have highlighted it as she is slow finishing her work in school. Test scores are good, but recently our childminder said the daydreaming is constant during her homework. We see this at home while eating. Very slow progress, and she needs constant gentle reminders. No idea how to fix or help this.
Yeah, my first thing, I love this one because she's 7 and she's doing exactly what 7-year-olds do. Children at that age are natural daydreamers, and some of them more than others, of course. But, you know, a lot of research is done into daydreaming, and is it an attention issue or is it something else? And all research points to it being something else. We adults can be very quick to label it an attention deficit issue when it's not. it's actually connected with creativity, with healthy social adjustment strategies. And I note in this letter that it says the test scores are good, which is also backed up with research which says daydreaming is actually connected to good school performance. So this is a time, and it's such a limited time for children that they have, because we do grow them up so quickly, that magical and omnipotent thinking is their realm, fantasy over reality and imagining things. So far from fixing it, I would actually be making other adjustments to enable her to get what's expected of her done. View her as, and I mean no harm by this, but a slower paced child that may simply need an extra 10 minutes compared to other children might need, and more time to get things done. Because her daydreaming, and is, again going back to her test scores being good, can help process information, can help them explore new ideas, to assimilate what's going on in their day, to understand things. I think that's what I would do. When it comes to the homework and the childminder's observations, I mean, look, homework is a tricky one for kids that age anyway, because they've been in school all day and they're really done with the formal cognitive learning by the time they get home. But if we do expect them to do homework, make sure to give her some free-floating, free expression, daydreaming time. Then she's going to sit and do homework and maybe use a timer so that she sees how much time she has to sit and do her homework, and then take another break and maybe come back at the homework then. So it's really around adjusting our expectations, but making it easier for her to achieve those goals.
But she could be a very imaginative child.
And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, goodness knows, great. we need more imaginative people in this world. I mean, it can only be a benefit. But I appreciate, as the parent of a child that age, and you're hearing back from school and childminders and homework is taking hours, I think you could get a little frustrated too. But try and go into her daydreams with her and ask her to tell you the story about them. Ask her to really maybe draw pictures of what she's thinking and bring her focus like an anchor point back into the now.
Right, something that is, I suppose, appropriate for towards the end of the month, the end of next month, I should say. My four-year-old son has a terrible fear of masks and Halloween. It all started at junior play school last year when the children dressed up for Halloween. He continually asks, when is Halloween? Doesn't want to go to school when it is. How can I help my son overcome this fear?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, it's back to that magical omnipotent thinking. Like at 4 years old, it's very hard to separate fantasy from reality, and that line is very, very blurred for children that age. So when he sees a mask that we know is a real person hiding behind a mask, for him it's really a monster or really a zombie or really whatever the mask is. So I would say don't minimize or dismiss his fears, because he'll feel like he's being silly then. So say that it is a scary time, and lots of people play with frightening things and play at being scary because they're not really, so they just try to play at it. And bear in mind that something that's not really scary can still be extremely frightening to a child, particularly a child that age. I would say, you know, read a few Halloween themed books. I mean, we do live in a time when there are the most beautiful storybooks that cover every parenting issue you could dream of. I mean, there's a little bunny or a little bear having every life crisis known to a child. And just maybe invest in some of those, because that degree of separation may actually help him see it from a removed angle. I'd also consider some alternatives to the trick-or-treating, to the mask wearing, by maybe hosting a family Halloween party where it's about bobbing for apples or carving pumpkins, or doing, you know, autumn leaf rubbings and making collages. So doing things that are Halloween themed, but not along the frightening, scary aspects of Halloween. There is more to Halloween than that. And it might be about, you know, adjusting it and giving him time, because at 4 years old, he is believing that it's all real. So you might, again, very, very slowly want to play with less frightening masks. So taking a mask, you can get them in places like the Art and Hobby Shop. You can get plain masks that children can paint at home or draw on with, you know, markers at home. And they could sit at home with those plain masks and decorate them themselves, try them on each other, swap them, take them on and off, so that he gradually begins to see that there's a real person behind the mask. But by giving him the opportunity to design his own, he's got much more control over that of what it looks like.
Right, we do have to take a commercial break after that. A 2.5-year-old perhaps acting out over his baby brother. Back in a minute. 53106 is our text number. That'll cost you 30 cent. We are coming to you today from the National Ploughing Championships. Joanna Fortune is with us for our parenting slot. Just going back to the question we had about the young fella who will pee in the toilet, but he won't poo in the toilet. Annabelle in Dublin 6 says, as a society, we train our kids to poop in a nappy, then expect them to do something different age 2 or 3, which is crazy. I advocate infant potty training. I put my baby on a potty from birth, fully trained by a year. It's a process that is easy on the child and saves so much on nappies and no cleaning messy poopy bums, says Annabelle. I don't know what you think about that, Joanna.
Yeah, it's something that we're hearing more and more about. I also read an article where somebody was advocating doing that as well to parents who were doctors that were doing it. But I think that, again, in parenting, we can be quick to judge what one another are doing. I think if that's worked for you and your child to infant potty train, super, go with that. But if it hasn't, you know, the traditional potty training has been around forever and somehow we all got through it. So it just takes time. But I think we can hold too rigidly to it must be done by this age. And that's simply, it's not a one size fits all. So I think we've got to just tune into the needs of our individual children and not worry about what other people are doing or what's worked for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I did actually, now that I think of it, we interviewed a woman in Australia who did something similar to that. But it was a full-time job until the baby was potty trained, and it was poop everywhere until the baby was potty trained.
Yeah, you have to be very comfortable with all of that for that to work. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
texting in to the woman who sits a newborn on a potty. Give me a break is one answer there. Right. Next question is this. Could you suggest a good punishment for a 2.5-year-old when I can't take him from the room? He's generally a good boy, but occasionally acts up when I'm breastfeeding his baby brother. He seems to know I can't put him in time out as I can't get up without upsetting the baby. Any suggestions appreciated?
Yeah, my opening line on this one probably won't be exactly what this parent is hoping to hear, but punishing a 2.5-year-old is going to be the most frustrating endeavour any parent ever tries to do, because 2.5-year-olds do not have a capacity for cause and effect. So you will literally drive yourself mad trying to reason and discipline a child under the age of 4. Really what you've got to do is operate looking for distraction over discipline at that age. So there's a couple of key things in this letter as well. You're saying he knows you can't take him from the room, that usually you would do a timeout, when actually what he's looking for at this time, it seems like, is a time in, because it's an occasional acting up when you're breastfeeding. So it may be very difficult for him to have to learn to share his mom with this new baby who's come in and usurped his place and being the apple and focus of his mom's time. So maybe looking at that, he doesn't do cause and effect, maybe distract him by involving him in activities around your practice with the baby. So if you're breastfeeding, have him sit on the sofa beside you and rub the baby's foot while you're doing that. If it's when you're changing, buy him a little baby doll and little baby nappies and have him mirror what you're doing in parallel. So you're talking through, and at the same time, give him a little narrative around, when you were a baby, I used to do all of these things with you, because of course none of us can remember receiving that kind of care. And he must be so, you know, jealous as well when he looks at it, because, and he's very young for it at this stage, but brace yourself, because that age gap is unavoidable sibling rivalry. So you're going to be dealing with this as the two boys continue to grow until they get to a developmental place where they can be good friends and play together. So I would say look at distraction techniques, give him little jobs to occupy him, reassure him by telling him that you did all of these things with him too when he was little. And I think the fact that he's doing it occasionally but is generally well behaved, it may be that what he's seeking is he wants you to take him out of the room, if that's what you usually do, because that actually secondary gain gives him one-to-one time that he may be craving. So if there's someone else around to give you a hand once you have fed the baby, maybe hand the baby over and spend some time one-to-one playing with him.
Yeah, you can see how, you know, he's looking at his baby brother being breastfed.
Yeah.
That's tremendously intimate.
Absolutely.
He really can't top that for attention, really, for one-on-one
No,
attention,
but, so. You know, he, in fairness to sort of look at the positive reframing, he is doing a good job at making his needs known. This isn't working for me. I need something else from you. So I think acknowledge that for him and just try to get the one-to-one time. And again, I'm not talking about hours. Giving him little bursts of 15, 20 minutes of one-to-one playtime is absolutely going to be enough to make him feel he still matters.
our 7-year-old daughter is getting very frustrated when she has to do any homework. She gets a fair amount, which I think is normal for her age, but she tenses up when she has to do it. And if either me or my husband tries to help her out, she starts crying and throwing tantrums. Yesterday, she ripped a page out of her copybook after I pointed out that she'd made a small mistake in her writing and that she might want to rub it out and try again. I couldn't believe she had such an extreme reaction. I've talked to a couple of parents at the school gates, and it doesn't seem like their new teacher is a tyrant or anything like that. My patience is starting to wear thin at this stage, so any sage advice you could offer would be most welcome.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little controversial on this one because I'm not a huge advocate, Sean, of homework, particularly for that age child, because I really do think, as I said a little earlier, that they've been in school all day and what they need is downtime and free time to play and just process everything that's happened in their day. But I appreciate that homework is part of the school system and there's no point in me lamenting about what's ideal when this is reality. I think my first step would be to actually mention it to the teacher that she's having, especially, I mean, very few teachers are tyrants in reality. But if the teacher is approachable on this, just to say she's having some difficulties and maybe the teacher has noticed that she has perfectionist tendencies in class, that she might find it very difficult to get it wrong. She may want to please the teacher. In terms of at home, I would be emphasising effort over outcome. And if she has a little mistake in her copybook, do you know what? Leave it and the teacher will address that the next day in school. I think praise that she's sat still and that she's really worked hard on her homework and she's focused for a long time. I think when she gets in from school, make sure that it's not straight to homework, that she has some time to play first and then bring her in. Because at 7 years old, developmentally, children are only beginning to develop a capacity to self-regulate their emotions. And what that means is that they can very easily and quickly become overwhelmed and overstimulated. And they need their parents to co-regulate with them and to reassure them that things are okay. So she sounds like she's actually trying really hard and finding it frustrating herself. So I, again, would use something like a visual timer, like she sees the time counting down. You're only going to sit here for 10 minutes. Then we take a 10-minute break. Then you come back for another 10 minutes and we're done. At her age, 20 minutes, maximum 30 minutes. No child should be sitting at homework longer than that. And if it doesn't get done in that time, don't be stressing about it. Go and talk to the school about it and say they sat for 30 minutes and this is what they got done.
Mm. Could it be, though, this little girl is, you know, has a tendency just personality wise to be very self-critical?
It could be. It could. And it might be that she finds it very hard to get things wrong. And practicing winning and losing and things like that might be helpful at home. And again, focus on board games or games of chance where there can be no strategy. I'm thinking like Snakes and Ladders, where it's literally a roll of a dice and winning and losing and getting things right and wrong. She can practice those. But again, I really want to emphasize at her age, focusing on the effort rather than the outcome. Even if she gets 10 out of 10 in her homework, focus on, I'm so proud that you tried so hard and you gave that your best effort, instead of saying, and you got 10 out of 10, because the next time if it's 8 out of 10, that's very hard for a child. So again, just focus on the effort and making sure that it's not prolonged time sitting there. And if there's little mistakes, we all need to make those so we can learn, but that's the teacher's job.
I was wondering if you gave me, this is a sad one, I was wondering if you could give me a bit of advice on how to help our 4-year-old understand that his dad is going to be working overseas for the next few months. After a long and hard debate, my husband has decided to take a job in Dubai for the next 9 months in order to make enough money for a deposit on a new house. It's not a decision we came to lightly, but know that it will be a valuable investment into our future. We have a 4-year-old daughter and she's just started Montessori. We decided it would be best not to uproot her from her normal life here and bring her to a foreign country. I'm going to move back in with my folks for the time that my husband is away, partly to save and partly to have some extra help with the childcare when I'm not at work. I just don't know how it's going to affect her when dad is away. She is the apple of his eye and a proper daddy's girl, so I think this might affect her badly. How can I tell her he's going to be gone, but assure her that he will come back eventually? We've also made the decision that he's not going to come home over Christmas, as it would cost too much, so it'll be her first one apart from him.
Yeah, this is a really sad one. And I think it's one that'll resonate with a number of families who've had to make really difficult decisions like this. And I know they're seeing it as short-term pain for long-term gain. And there's a lot for that. So there's a couple of transitions coming up. One, dad is going to move away. And two, they're going to move in with grandparents. So there's a, you know, that's two transitions to manage with her. Children generally develop what we call people permanence by the around 18 months old, which means that when you leave a room, they know you're going to come back. So they know you still exist when they don't see them. So she will have developed that. But when dad moves away, they might anticipate a little regression in that, that she may worry, has daddy disappeared? Where is he gone? Why can't I touch him? So there's a couple of practical things I'm going to suggest that they do. First of all, that they do let her know that it's happening, that they involve her in seeing him pack his bag, but that he leaves a number of key items and some of his belongings visibly there. So she knows he's coming back because he's left stuff there. That they look at developing a calendar. Now, at her age, 9 months is a long time. I wouldn't be putting 9 months on a calendar because it'll seem interminable to her. But on a week-to-week, maximum month-to-month basis, put a little calendar up and make little standout 3D pockets and have daddy write out a number of little messages before he goes that can be pushed into the calendar. And every day, a little bit like an advent calendar, every day she gets to open it and see a message from daddy that's very connected to her life. So have a great day in Montessori, have a great day learning your numbers. I heard that you learned your numbers yesterday and that was really good. So she knows, oh, he knows what's going on in my life. He's still very connected. And that'll help her hold him in mind, but also know that she is being held in mind by him while he's away. I think as well that they're going to have to use other visual communication tools like Skype or Zoom or FaceTime or one of those platforms so that she can see him every day and talk to him and share her highlights, that if he asks her every day what was the best bit of her day and what bit would she like to change, then they've got an ongoing kind of structure to the communication. Because she's also moving in with her grandparents, they might like to try and make an adventure out of this, that she's going to tell him all of her adventures that happened in grandma and grandpa's, and he's going to tell her his adventures wherever he's going. And I think, you know, that's one thing to prep a child for this separation. But there's two parents here also going through a big transition and a big personal sacrifice for ultimately the benefit of their family. So it's a really brave decision they've had to make. So I would encourage mum and dad to really mind themselves on this one as well and trust their parenting instincts that, you know, they can be enough for her and get her through this. But lots of visual aids, lots of reassurance, and taking just little stock of what pieces of news are we going to share with daddy today.
And a fair few people texting in saying how heartbreaking that question is. Yeah. One person says the things we have to do to be property owners in this country.
That's that's a bigger question.
Yeah, that does. During the time we've been speaking, Joanna, a baby poop controversy seems to have kicked off. Someone says, when I was potty training my son, we found we felt comfy in his nappy, and he liked pooing in it, so he was very reluctant to poo without it. I took off his nappy and followed him around with the potty all day just so it was near him. Eventually, he couldn't hold it in anymore and pooped quite near the potty. So loads of praise. Well done, Johnny. You nearly got it into the potty. He was so pleased with himself and soon he got to liking with nothing on his bottom. Though Joanna, or Annabelle, I should say, who was onto us already, who says that she didn't go the nappy route at all. She just let them poop in the natural way, I suppose. Traditional potty training has only been around since nappies, and the time has extended with disposables, she says. Saying quick to judge is what I think you've just directed at me. Infant potty training is easy and doesn't have to be a full-time job unless you make it one. It's no more time than changing a nappy.
No, I wasn't judging. I hope that was clear. Okay. I wasn't judging her. No, I think none of us should judge either of us. Yeah.
Dee says, my youngest, and this is on the daydreaming question, my youngest child daydreamed his way right through primary school, but also secondary school. His grades were average to poor, but he was an exceptionally happy, well-adjusted chap. He scraped into college and decided to study sociology. A light bulb went on. He got a 2-1 degree and 2 years later has a super job. Sometimes you just have to trust that it will all work out.
Absolutely. And not every child is, you know, made for structural cognitive learning, and they may excel in the more creative subjects and ultimately find their way like that woman's just outlined. But I don't want us thinking daydreaming is a problem. I think it's a lovely experience that children go through and we should let them have that time.
Joanna, thanks a million for coming in to us today. That's Joanna Fortune there, psychotherapist. We're going to take a break. After that, how to make a happy marriage.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering. providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. Five Rivers Fostering.ie.